I'm just kidding.
He just swallowed that last bite.
We'll turn it over to our new fighter.
Watch me. What we'll start out with is some of the most exciting things, the review of where we are with this current year budget. And what I've done this year, since the retreat's a little bit later, actually is 7 months worth, so through the end of January. So we'll just go fund by fund, and I'm going to keep going, and if anybody has a question at any point, I mean, just stop me at that point, but otherwise I'll just try to keep going through each fund. And with each fund, it's going to kind of be a summary like this. Then I'll show a graph with a chart with revenue for the current year versus budget by category. And then I'll also show some history at that point for revenue, 5 years worth for the same categories. Then the same thing with expenses. And then finally, I'll just show our change in fund balance for each fund. So we'll start out with the general fund. Then through January 31st, we're kind of where we normally will be at this point in time, about 79% of our revenue and 58% of our expenses. So this kind of is a breakdown of the revenue by some of the major categories for the year, and the blue being the budget, the red is the actual. So you see property taxes were, again, kind of where we should be, about 97%, because most of the collections come in through the beginning of January, and now they've slowed down quite a bit. And everything's pretty much running on target at this point, with the exception of franchise, or it's really the new electricity sales tax is running ahead of what I expected at this point, so that's a good thing. Building permits, impact fees, counter fees, that's all running ahead of schedule. That's all based on building activity. TDA funds, it says 0%, but we, at the last meeting, or the meeting before January meeting, submitted a request for about $200,000, so we should be getting that soon. And communication towers is down just a little bit because once we approved this budget, we were notified, I believe it was by Nextel or Sprint, or that's the same company, that they were discontinuing their lease. So that actually eliminated about $15,000 of revenue annually, so that's down at this point. And the all other category, the main things in there are sales tax refund of about $36,000. Parks and Rec and community center activities, and the firefighters assistance grant that the fire department got this year is in there. Was, at this point, it's about $13,300. I think there's a little bit more to come. And ABC revenue is about $9,500 of that category. And other financing as well as what we have so far this year.
One question on the sales tax. That's the ad valorem tax, right? So,
well, that's the ad valorem is the property tax, the first category. So the sales tax is the actual sales tax revenue we get from the state. So,
okay, and that's not based on ad valorem. So.
Well, it is actually the way the New Hanover County, well, back up there, in North Carolina, you can distribute sales tax two ways, per capita, or based on ad valorem tax. New Hanover County does it ad valorem, which actually benefits the beach towns. If we switch to a per capita, it would definitely have a negative impact on all the beach towns.
My question is, and I'm not asking you to really, maybe you do have an answer, but I know that I think the county taxes are going up, or Wilmington taxes are going up, but is that going to have an adverse effect on our share?
Yeah, it does. It's usually a one-year delay.
Right.
It was the same thing happened when we increased our tax rate a couple of years ago, even though ours has had less of an impact. But, you know, it would impact the other towns in the county. Okay. It's probably not a significant impact, but yeah, it could reduce just slightly. But most likely that would be offset by the sales tax revenue just continuing, you know, as the economy is better. I mean, the revenues each year have been increasing, so most likely we won't see a decline. Maybe just not as much of an increase. This is the basically the same categories, but it shows the 5-year history of the category of the different revenue sources. You kind of see that We are fairly consistent. You can see some of the things like property taxes in fiscal year 12 and 13, you see where we did tax increases. That's why you see jumps there. Sales tax, like I said, you kind of see a steady growth with that, which is in the trend in the state over the last couple of years. Some of the other unusual things, TDA back in 2011, we kind of played catch up for a couple of years that we hadn't submitted anything, like in 2009 and 10, so we submitted those things in 11. So it's a larger amount there. Garbage and recycle, you kind of see the impact of a small increase in garbage collection fees we did in 2014. And then all other, the biggest things there are, that was transfers. In fiscal year 13, the green, that was federal asset forfeiture money that came in. And then in 2014, it was money that we transferred in from the Water and Sewer Fund that we received from Carolina Beach, or refund from Carolina Beach. And then the last category is the loans, and the reason for 2015, we purchased those three vacant lots, so that was a significant loan of over $400,000. So, other than that, we're kind of consistent, really. And our main revenue sources really don't change.
Arlen, do you think we're going to, or John, exceed building permits? Looks like this year, over last year. We've got, what, 5 more months?
Probably. Right now we're at 56. Well through the end of January we're at 56,000. So we'll definitely exceed what we did for last year. Maybe not what we did in, 2013 looks like the high at 67,000. Mm-hmm. So. I don't know, John probably have a better idea. All right, so next is expenses, and this is shown by a department or major category also. Had to combine a few things into the other category at the far right. This also shows, I guess for the most part, everybody is where we would expect them to be at this point in time in the year. There's a couple that are might look a little higher than, through January would be at about 58.5% or so of the budget. So certain things are a little higher. Council, for example, and that's just because of some of the funding that was done up front in the budget year. Same thing with administration. There's things like workers' comp and property and liability insurance that's paid up front. Finance, there's the financial software maintenance fees that we pay up front. Also, some of the sales tax is running a little higher than we thought through this point in time. And we'll see debt service also is kind of the timing of the loans. And then in the last category, the main part is the contingency. And we started out at $130,680, and at this point, on here it's actually at about $123,000, but we just lowered it a little bit more at the last council meeting last week, and so the balance on our contingency now is about $111,600 approximately. So this shows the expenses, basically the same categories over the last 5 years, and really, the main fluctuation kind of goes between the police department and streets and sanitation. It really depends on the amount of capital outlay they have in a given year. But some of the other unique things that you see for administration and finance, you see in 2015 was significantly higher. Well, that's where we recorded the purchase of the three vacant lots. So that's what drove that up. Fire department, you see an increase in 2014. Well, that was when there was an increase in headcount for the fire department. So there was a fairly significant increase there. for legal, you see some higher amounts in 2013 or 14, and that all relates to the oceanfront park and attorney fees and settlement. And then in the all other category, Really, released to a variety of things back, all the way back in 2011, as things that you heard before, which was kind of balancing out our books, recording things in the appropriate accounts between the capital project fund and the general fund. So it made it look like there was a significant transfer in 2011, which I guess there was from the general fund to the capital project fund. And then in 2013, I mentioned with the revenue that we had federal asset forfeiture funds that came in of about $300,000, and then set up a separate fund to keep track of those. So this kind of shows going out of the general fund but into the asset forfeiture fund. And then in both 14 and 15, the amounts, the primary amounts and other are transfers to the beach protection fund that was set up in 2014. This actually shows the change in our general fund balance, and I have to say it shows a very good trend at this point. After the impact in 2011 of adjusting for that capital project fund and the transfer that I mentioned, we've actually, the fund balance has gone from $1,065,000 up to $2.5 million. So very positive trend. It's actually an increase of almost 140% over that time period. Whether that trend continues, it's hard to say at this point, but so far it's been a very positive trend. Maybe I'll ask any questions on the general fund before I move on to the next. Okay, next I'm just going to cover the stormwater fund. And again, kind of where we would expect to be. The revenues and expenses are maybe a little bit lower than what we would think, saying that we should have our 58% through the year. But it really has to do with capital projects and the timing of those. So other than that, we're kind of right on track. So this also shows the revenue by category. And we see that the main revenue source, which is the stormwater fees, are right on track, what we expected. Stormwater building fees running well above budget, just based on the amount of building activity within the town. And the last category, that appropriate fund balance, that's really going to be the revenue, part of the revenue source for a major stormwater project in Curie Beach Village. So that's shown as part of this average. You know, we haven't had to actually transfer any funds yet at this point. And this shows the revenue by source over the last 5 years. Again, you see fairly, very consistent. You see the impact in 2012 of the stormwater fee increase, which was done to actually set aside money for future projects, which we'll be talking about later. Everything else is fairly consistent, stormwater building fees based on building activity within the town. Stormwater fund expenses through January and very much where we would expect to be. The only difference, main difference is the transfer, again, based on the timing of when the capital project was started for stormwater work. And this shows stormwater expenses for the last 5 years. Operations, you see an increase in 2014. That's where we actually moved one public works, an additional public works employee to the stormwater fund based on the amount of work that was being done on stormwater related work. So you see the impact of that. Other than that, everything else is fairly consistent. And this is the stormwater fund balance, and again showing the red being the change in the fund balance per year. And this also, like the general fund, shows a very positive trend. Balance has actually increased about 117% over the last 5 years. So we built up a very nice amount, I guess, for some of these future projects that Sonny's going to be talking about later. Next, I was going to cover the PAL bill fund. As most of you know, that's the money, primarily money we receive from the Department of Transportation for street maintenance and construction, repairs, et cetera. Restricted to only those uses. Revenue was right where we expected it to be, and expenses typically run more in the spring, I guess, when more street-related work would be done. So And this just shows the revenue. It's really just two sources, and it's primarily one being the allocation that we received from the Department of Transportation, so that we're pretty close to the estimates on that. And this shows the revenue of the fund for the past 5 years, and they're very consistent year to year. And this just shows the expenses for over a 5 year period, and that can vary just depending on what needs to be done. And always under Sonny's direction or whatever, what work needs to be done. So you see kind of a bit of a fluctuation in that. And then this is the balance in the Powell Fund. Again, depends on the amount of, since the revenue is fairly consistent, just really depends on the amount of expenditures. And we do have limitations on how much we can have as a fund balance of Powell bill money. And it's really, it can't be more than the total of the 10 most recent allocations. So we're well within that guideline, but they do have a limit on how much we can really fund up. So next, I'm just going to cover the other two, what are considered governmental funds, which are the non-business type activity funds. So everything leading up to this were also governmental funds. The first being beach protection, which was set up a couple of years ago for any beach-related type expenses, whether it be beach nourishment or repairs to access or whatever it may be. And right now, the budget, the revenue source for that is a transfer from the general fund. So we transferred $50,000. Extra money there is interest income. This would move some of the fund balance into the North Carolina Capital Management Trust at this point. So I'll need some interest on that.
Mm-hmm. And what's the total amount in our beach protection fund?
I'll get to that in just 2 minutes. I'll show you that. So. And then the asset forfeiture, just a summary of that. We started out with a budget of $50,000. We amended that to $60,000. So it's really just the restricted use funds from the police department can use for non-operating expense type expenditure. So the Beach Protection Fund was Emily's question. We started that fund in 2014, so this actually, the fund balance runs through December 31st. I've been updating it through that point. So you see that through December 31st, it's at about almost $237,000. The first year that we put money in, we actually spent some of it when we bulldozed some sand, I guess, up on the beach. But that's the balance right at this point in time. And this is the Federal Asset Forfeiture Fund balance that we talked about. And the big, large influx of funds came in 2013. And since then, as different needs have come up, the police department has spent some of those funds on various equipment and other related things. So.
Do you know what percentage of the police budget, forfeiture assets?
What percentage, like the current balances of their, probably less than 10% at this point.
Yeah.
If I understand what you're asking.
The 13 would have been about 30%, maybe.
Right.
Because you're not allowed to use it to defray any normal expenses, so you can't go towards the budget.
Right, it's just for things outside of the normal operating budget. So, I mean, they've bought a variety of different types of equipment, some specialized, or different types of training, I think, has been used for in the past. I think at one point, even an additional vehicle that would have been above and beyond the normal.
Vehicle, body cams, engineering car cams, some office remodeling, audio, visual,
or any stuff. Salaries pulled out of it?
No salaries. Anybody have any other questions on that? switched over to the business type funds, main one being the water and sewer fund. And we're kind of on track with that. We're maybe slightly ahead of where we thought we'd be with revenue, and that really primarily relates to Fort Fisher. They did some construction work down there and so had some very significant deliverables early in the year in regard to their landscaping. I mean, that one, there was a $30,000 bill for 1 month, in regard just for water. So.
Did they ever contact the National Board?
We let that know up front.
Okay.
And we called down too and said, listen, we're in, this is what we see with the bill, and this is what we think. Why, maybe, yeah, they sent somebody out, right? Because they thought they came and talked to you too, Sonny?
Oh, yeah.
They tried to figure out what the problem was. They came and talked to us too, so. But the determination was it was they were running sprinklers like, 24/7, so.
They're going to be right. Okay.
So this shows the revenue, actual versus budget, by category, and again, we're kind of pretty much on track with water and sewer, maybe running slightly ahead, but also, you know, February and March are kind of lesser months, so, you know, we're kind of where we should be, I would say. Tap and connection fees, we're running well ahead, and that's over here, building activity. Other revenue, the biggest component there is the past due charges or late fees that we put on people's accounts. So that's about $3,500 of that $4,400 that's shown there. And then the other category is loans for, and at this point it's been for I don't know what you call it. I call it the sewer stormwater cleaning machine or whatever that was purchased. And then a Polaris also was. So that's what that is. And there's a couple other things that will be coming out of there that I think a truck and maybe a generator to get to it. And then this shows the revenue by category for the last 5 years. And again, you can kind of see with water and sewer when we did various rate increases. You see in like 2012, you see a jump there, that's when they increased the minimum charge. And then in 2013, we had increased the incremental charges over the minimum gallons. But then you see it level off. And that was really a decline in usage and kind of led to the reason that we needed to do the increase for 2016. So we should see a definite jump in revenue when we look at the same thing now when we had a full year of 2016.
But that was what we said, was part of our strategy is
exactly.
To give people to use less, and that's what it did, which is good.
Yeah, it's accomplishing exactly what it's supposed to.
Right.
Other unusual things on here, tap and connection fees. Back in 2011, there was the water connection at Fort Fisher was about $185,000, so that jumped that up. Other revenue, back in 2013, we had a loan forgiveness. It was part of a loan that we had for sewer rehab work back in 2009 that finally processed all the way through in 2013, and half of the loan was forgiven. So in the water and sewer fund, that counts as revenue. So that's why we see that jump. And then in 2014, about $400,000 that we got back from Caroline Beach from some overcharges on the sewer charge. So this shows the expenses by department and where they are as of January 31st. There's really nothing unusual here. $50,000 transfer, again, as part of a potential capital project, it was going to be the water line replacement, and we're going to take $50,000 from the water and sewer fund and put it into a capital project fund. So that'll all depend on the timing of that project. And then also, when you look at expenses by department over 5 years, again, nothing really that unusual in transfers. 2014, there's $160,000, but we talked about that earlier. That was a transfer from the water and sewer fund to the general fund. And this is the, it's called net position because it's a business type fund, but it's basically the same as fund balance that we normally talk about. And this shows the two main categories of net position, which are invested in capital assets. That's all the infrastructure and equipment and vehicles and everything. Basically considered non-spendable. So that's remained fairly consistent. The reason you do see a drop is because we haven't had any significant projects, and it's showing the impact of depreciation of the assets that we have. The red part is considered unrestricted, and the way it's, in theory, it's kind of like spendable money, but it's not completely spendable because not all of it is actually cash or investment. Some of it could be receivables and that type of thing, but it's also an amount you don't want to necessarily spend down because you're supposed to be building the fund for future capital projects. So they're kind of the two categories. Took this and just said, well, what's the change in our net position from year to year? And that makes you think about it a little bit differently, because you do see we have some years that our net position actually decreases, which it did in 2015. And for two of the years that we had an increase for 13 and 14, those increases primarily related to, for 13, we talked about that loan forgiveness of like $200,000. In 2014, a refund from Carolina Beach. So that really is the only reason that our fund balance increased. And that was another reason that, you know, we had to take the steps with the water and sewer rates for 2016. So we should see an increase for 2016. But again, the reason for the increase is for future capital projects.
So just for the inline pipes and water sewer, which is a big part of that, right? What is the depreciation schedule we use? Is it 27.5 or 40 or?
Well, it depends on the asset category. I think my buildings we use like 40, and infrastructure I think we may actually use 50.
Okay.
But then some things like some other types of equipment we use 5. But it probably averages around $200,000 a year is what our depreciation expense is.
I just wonder because, I mean, that really drives whether you should be concerned about this going down or not.
Right.
If your schedule is too long, that means you're going to run out.
Right.
The stuff's going to break before you have money. If it's too short, you end up overcharging and you get extra money you don't need. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, and that's why we vary it like that.
Okay. And it's some of your... You and Arlen decide the depreciation schedule, or he just tells you how to do it?
He just tells me.
Okay. I mean, I'm honest, I'm sad, right? Yeah, I know, okay. Okay. So you pick it from what the legal someone tells you is the
right
one? Yeah,
I just, you know, finance officer or association stuff.
Yeah. So it's not experience in Cary Beach, it's a more
right, just more the normal, you know, typical amount that there are a number of years at the municipalities. Our last fund is the Sewer Expansion Reserve Fund, or SERF. This is kind of a capital project fund also, and its sole revenue source is the user fees that are paid for new construction, and then interest income on the investments that are in there. You see that also is running well above what we budgeted for this year. Again, totally based on building activity, it's a $2,500 user fee that funds this account. So here I just showed the change in the fund balance. We haven't really used anything out of here for a number of years, so we have seen steady increase in this fund balance also. So that also has increased over 116% over the last 5 years. Now I know we have some things on the horizon that we're going to use some money out of here. I think one is the bypass project. I think we had decided earlier that would be 100% funded out of here. And then there may be some other things that come up that will also use some funds from here. Next, I just wanted to move on and just let me back up. Anybody have any questions, I guess, on the kind of where we are at through this point in time with any of the funds? So what I wanted to do was just something that our annual reporting to council on the minimum fund balance policy. It was something that was adopted back in 2012. It really is that we want to maintain at least 32% of fund balance, and that would be what we consider unrestricted funds, and that's the general fund, stormwater fund, powerboat, beach protection, and federal asset forfeiture. And then the unrestricted part is considered anything that's committed, assigned, or unassigned fund balance. So when we go back here, this shows the different categories. So in other words, we're looking at everything except the bottom three because they're all restricted funds. So the restricted being the federal asset forfeiture, power bill money at the bottom, and then the restricted for state statutes, a calculation we have to do every year at the end of the year to set aside a minimum amount of money. And it can fluctuate, as you see, significantly based on the amount of accounts payable you have at the end of the year. So for 2014, we did maybe a larger number of purchases right near the end of the year that we didn't actually pay for them until the beginning of the next year. So we had higher liabilities at the end of the year. So that drove that balance up quite significantly in 2014.
Arlen, we showed that the beach protection fund was at $236,000. How does that relate to the, is only $186,000 of it signed for something?
Well, no, that, because this is as of June 30th, 2015, that was one of the only ones that I actually, it was realistic to take it to June, to December 31st.
Okay.
Because some of the other funds, the timing difference with the amount of revenue coming
okay.
doesn't really paint a clear picture, I guess, of the fund balance. But that one I could do that.
Got it.
Thank you.
So that's the fund balance policy that the council adopted back in 2012, as we talked about. This just kind of shows where we are in relation to that policy. And before the policy was adopted, you see we're actually below what we would want to be. Since then, we've had a steady increase, which goes right along with the increase in fund balance that we had seen earlier. I also just added on, well, what if we only looked at unassigned fund balance? And that also you can see.
Keep going.
That also you can see that from 2013 to present that we are also above that 32%, even just looking at unassigned fund balance. So then it shows the strength of our reserves right now. I don't know if anybody has any questions on that before we kind of move on to the goals that the council had set last year and just kind of get a brief status of each one of those. Any questions on anything? Edward Soley?
What?
Are you going to do your projections?
Yeah. So I thought at this point we'd just kind of go through the goals that council had set at last year's retreat and kind of give a brief status. So I'll just kind of run through the goals, resolution of outstanding Sandman issues, develop a short and long-term space plan for the town, maintain the current tax rate, develop a long-term plan for beach nourishment, prioritize potential green infiltration projects, review and implement the salary study that was done last year, and then monitor potential revenue shortfalls. So those were all things that you had identified last year, what you wanted your goals for this current budget year to be. So I just would run through each one and kind of give a status of what those were. And some of these other people probably have a lot more that they could say about these in regard to the status, this one being one. The resolution of outstanding issues related to Sandman properties, and I just identify that as in progress. And to keep it simple, just send the discussions with the homeowners associations continue. I know there might be more behind all of that, but just trying to keep it simple for this purpose. So
do we still have to resolve the stormwater issues before we can talk about the property in there? Or?
I think we definitely do. I mean, both communities have taken the position they'll sue us if we try to sell it until we get it resolved. So unless you guys want to be sued, I think we definitely. hope so. So they have to fix their pond or the state's going to fine them. Sonny and I are working with them to fix our small part. Whether that turns into them releasing us or not, I don't know that I know the answer to that. I don't think anybody else does either, right? So I think definitely the beach wall community feels we're working in good faith. It's not an issue of doing it, by the way. Curie Dunes is taking a, well, we're just going to wait and see approach, right? So their position is much weaker, but that doesn't mean you can't get sued just because you have a weak position, right? All it is filing it. And both homeowners association have attorneys on their board, so they work for free. So I don't know that we have an answer for that. We'll keep working on it. I'll update you guys every time we meet. But I don't see it working itself out without a lot of work, right? I mean, it won't be a lot of money from us, but I wouldn't count that we could sell that property anytime in the short term without having a lot of pain. And as soon as you say you want to sell it and they file a lawsuit, no one's going to be interested in buying it because they don't get tied up in it, so we should fix it on the front end. Plus, we look bad. We look stupid doing that, so.
Yeah. Okay, the next goal from last year was develop a short-term and long-term space plan for town departments. I'm saying that's in progress too. We did have some preliminary discussions at a department head meeting within the last month or two. And then there's also, it's going to be discussed further as part of this retreat. So, in progress.
There have been some actions on the short term. Police chief's taken a few actions. Administration's taken a few actions.
I'm just rearranging the space.
So again, it's really maintenance and current facilities.
Fire department is taking some action.
Well, fire department. We just need to set goals in direction. Okay.
Next was maintain the current tax rate if possible. That was completed. The fiscal year 16 budget did not include increasing taxes. Develop a long-term plan for funding beach nourishment, including one new funding stream, independent of property tax as well. I'll call that in progress too. I guess we're always looking for something, but at this point we don't have it. I mean, we have set up that beach protection fund, but that's funded from the general fund, so.
Most of all, the beaches, the mayors and mayor pro tems and managers have been meeting a few times, and I think the biggest thing that has come out of it is that we're all going to work together. Each town is not going to develop a long-term plan for whatever their needs are. We're all going to work together and support each other. And there's been some talk that we may or may not, in the future, have to use general funds for beach renourishment. That is a really, really big if. As you know, the county has now hired a lobbyist for the legislature. He has his ideas about getting the state to pay about, what is that,
65%.
And I don't know, that's, if it weren't for the fact that he's considered one of the best lobbyists in the state, I would say he doesn't have a chance. And he's not really going to start on it until December after the election. His idea of getting able to make it a permanent line item in the state budget. Meanwhile, the three of counties, I mean the three beaches, are very, very serious about trying to get our own legislation in there that would provide money for us, whether it comes out of the county or the general fund. It can't continue to come out of ROT forever. And so far, the suggestions we sent forward to the county have not set well with them or their lobbyist. So, yeah, that is still in discussion and will be for probably forever.
I think we have a chance. He's taken the inlet formula, which has already been approved, and he's trying to apply it to beaches. So if we it's kind of like something exists, let's just expand that coverage.
But it wouldn't, but it wouldn't come from the same pot of money.
No, it doesn't come from the same pot of money. But the point that I want to make is that we finally have committed effort at the legislature to work on this. Even if we're successful there, personally, we need to maintain our own beach protection fund. And as for events between renourishments, like you stated, we might have to push some sand around because we have to go in bad buildings during the course of that.
And even at this point, I mean, the way we've been funding that, I would say independent of property taxes, but we haven't really done that yet. We're transferring money from the general fund. It's really coming from, most likely from property tax revenue. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with Greg. We can't just total the count on the county coming up with the other 35% that we cover everything.
May I interrupt and ask a question related to beach conversion?
Yes, sir.
I'm curious, I know we have limitations as far as jetties and hill grinds and so forth. Do we have any restrictions by either the state or the federal government to take advantage of wind drift of sand and putting up structures on the beach which will divert the sand closer to the berms, extending the berm conditions? Can anyone answer that question?
Are you referring to putting up some type of fencing that would in fact catch sand?
Not putting up fencing to catch it, but to divert it in something that could be moved around to move into different positions. All you need is a relatively shallow block. The wind's coming from a certain direction. Go ahead and divert the sand that's being blown during heavy wind conditions towards the berm. And if you're doing that, you can control how the beach is developing to some extent in a natural way by using the deflectors.
When John comes in, you know, he can't handle this better than the rest of us. I think a temporary structure. John?
No, that's what we need is a temporary.
Yeah, something you can move around. Charlie had a question that said, do we have the ability to put temporary type structures on the beach that would capture wind-driven sand and maybe push it in a direction that would be possible to prevent us from
Well, we can certainly put sand fencing up in where we want to. Charlie's sand fencing was like a year ago.
Yeah, Charlie's not talking about fencing.
John, what I was suggesting was putting up deflection barriers so that when you get wind, strong winds in a certain direction, that you can go ahead and divert rather than having it go straight down the beach, divert it towards the berms.
So sand fencing with a more substantial barrier in direction. Is that what you're talking about?
Something that would stop the sand from going through it, either mount it, pile it up in that particular area, or
well, that point
directly
would be, towards the barrier. If you put barriers out across the beach strand, I don't think Cameron would look timely on that, not to mention I don't believe that we want to do that. After a short period of time or a couple of storms, we're going to have a pretty nice sized ridge, berm type fields, and then we're going to have to get out there with a backhoe and push that sand up, I believe is where you're coming from.
John, if I may give you an example. Let's say this is a block of wood. As the wind is blowing, and it's blowing from this direction, all this is a block of wood that's maybe about 10 feet long. And all you're doing is you're taking the wind, it's drifting down, the sand is drifting down this way,
and push the wind is pushing it towards the berm. That block of wood doesn't have to stay there all the time. You put it down where you want it, given the conditions as far as winds are concerned. It's not a permanent thing, and you're not trapping, you're deflecting the sand.
I follow you. Yeah, I mean, that probably works. Sure.
I think you can trap sand, I don't know exactly. I think probably we should explore that a little further beyond this meeting with you. But deflecting sand would almost require like some type of wear back pipe that would actually drip it. I don't know how setting a block of wood like this, even if I put it this way, when a sand deflects it, it's going to hit that and it's going to fall.
That's exactly right.
It's not going to go magically around the corner. But it's still okay. It's still okay that it's a flood. If you can develop a pile of sand and then push it up towards the dune, I don't know that that's fine.
Yes, really good. There would be a simple answer to this as to my question, if it can be done. Because these things would be removed, all you would have to do is place two or three of them out there to see what kind of an impact it would have, rather than committing yourself to any long-term or expensive position.
Based on what you're talking about, absolutely, we can stick some stuff out there and see if it works.
Why don't you check on that for us, John?
I mean, what would you like for me to check on?
To see, maybe along with Sunny, we put a couple of pieces of wood out there to see whether or not that would work.
Well, we could definitely do it. I think Sunny would have to commit to using some of his manpower to construct those and put them out there occasionally. Definitely, as far as I'm concerned, I don't see any problem with trying that for, you know, a couple of days at a time in different areas if you don't want to go that route.
Yeah, if you have a 12-foot piece.
Does anybody else do this anywhere, John?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
Yeah, so I don't think the citizens, because whichever house you put in front, we already have citizens complain about the lifeguards here. We're not going to put big pieces of wood out there to divert sand in an experiment. I mean, at least from my position. Great idea, but find somewhere else to experiment, because I know what's going to happen. Sonny and the fire chief and the building inspector are going to call from whatever property we put this in front of. Just like right now, it gets called about, hey, this lifeguard stands a block in my view. Our citizens are very, very not happy for anything on the beach at all. And I can't imagine a big thing of plywood to knock sand down that's going around is going to be. So whichever property owner you guys want to piss off, just pick the right one, because we're going to be getting a call.
If I concur with what you're saying, when you're doing a test to find out whether something is going to be practical, you want to get the property owner's permission. But it's going to be close enough to the berm anyway, so that as far as it blocking anyone's view or inhibiting them, unless it's placed in front of the stairs, it's not, shouldn't be a problem.
Matt, I just gave you counsel opposition.
Next.
It certainly is something to get. If you had spoken to that property owner and said, we're going to use this to see if we can develop your berm, make your berm larger, that's why it's there. They still may say, not here.
I think the issue for me, and maybe I should double the approach, if with all the concern around beach re-nourishment and sand moving on beaches across the entire East Coast, and no one's come up with this, you know, all the schools that are looking at it, there's obviously reasons why people aren't doing it. Because if it was so great, so free, Cape Fear Community College, UCW, I don't know, some school in New Jersey, somebody would have came up with it, right? So it's like, okay, yeah, there's 10,000 great ways to do something, and I agree, every once in a while someone comes up with a better way, but this is an area that's been pretty detailed research by a grapple of people, and it would be being done somewhere that's got all the great advantages and then disadvantages. don't know what they are, but I'm just thinking that, you know, take it offline, find someone, Charlie, that says, someone that knows about beach stuff that says this is a great thing to do and bring it back to council. But we spend a lot of time talking about an idea when we have a lot of work that we got to do today.
Well, John, what about talking to somebody at Camaw or Bob Kessler and find out if anybody's ever suggested that before or tried
it? I can certainly do that. I mean, in my opinion, his idea there has little merit. It's going to do exactly what he is talking about it doing. It's going to pile sand up right in front of it. It's not going to divert it into our dunes, I don't believe.
Well, bring the day, it's going to cover it up, and somebody's going to have to get it. But they don't talk.
There you go.
I don't bring the day, it's going to cover up, not pick it up.
That's really what it comes down to. We can build these things, or some of these guys can build these things, and all the bottom line is, this manpower and time to do all that is the really benefit. So.
And how tall are you talking about?
How tall about?
How tall is this block of wood that's there?
I was talking about
it. How high up?
I'm picturing those billboards we have on the front of our Alabama Avenue and Fort Fisher Boulevard that put our signs on, banners on. That's kind of what I've got in my mind about what he's talking about. So,
3-4 feet?
3 by 10, 3 by 12, something like that.
It would take a few hits to fill that thing up and push it significantly towards sand or towards the dune to help quite a bit. It'd have to be pretty long. If you get even if you had 18 feet, we should probably take it down to the water. I mean, I'm starting to lean a little more towards David's position. In any case, we should probably develop it or think about it later after this meeting.
Okay.
We'll move on to the next one. Prioritize potential dune infiltration projects. I listed that as in progress and.
Well, where does
didn't
that stand,
son? Well, that stands at Longmont Priority List right now, so that's where it stands. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. We'll start talking about drainage if you'd like to. But,
We didn't discuss at last retreat that we don't think we have enough beach.
We definitely don't have enough beach now. But after re-nourishment, there may be, I don't know, but they're finding a location to put one of these projects in so they're fine, number one. Number two, we have a lot of different problems right now we need to take care of before we go to do another project on the beach. To treat water to go out there, we need to get rid of it before we treat it. So that's the way I'm looking at my priority list right now. Now, town council who wants to do a little something different, that's fine. We can hire a engineer to come in and engineer all of them they want to out there. I'll be glad to work with DOT and work with North Carolina State to help us out like we did last time, possibly, whatever, to do some of these. But what we have to understand about these, again, I'm going to emphasize this, we're talking about treating the first half inch of rain. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about diverting hardly any water whatsoever. We don't have enough area to stage enough of the what they call them, huh? Yeah, those whatever they are.
Infiltration.
Out on the beach to hold enough water to do what we did, really basically, except to try to treat the water going on the beach, which is a good thing, and I agree with that. I think our emphasis on getting rid of the water should be number one priority. And we have some work to do on that. So I'd rather concentrate on that right now and maybe look at maybe one or two of these projects in the future.
And I think just to dovetail that, I mean, we have a community that wanted us to work with them, but there's no property, right? So the beach, the one we put in, if you look at where it is, the town was fortunate enough to have a big dune line in front of a street. There's no private property there. Anywhere else you want to put that, there's private property, and the only way to fit it in is to encroach on someone's private property, and once you start talking to people about it, they're not very interested in that.
Well, we're going to not only be encroaching on possibly on some of their property, but what we'll be doing is tearing up the dune system in front of the pond.
Right.
And there comes into a you know, another major problem. I mean, tearing out a dune system, put the system in, trying to put the dune system in, then we have a storm. Then what kind of liability does the town have for the structure that's sitting in front of it?
Right.
The areas that we did put the systems in, there was no structures in front of it. It was basically town property out in front, and so the Coastal Resource Commission didn't really have a major problem with us tearing that dune system up.
Right.
Well, they did, but we had to put it back a certain way or whatever. But we didn't have the endangerment of some of the structures that these structures would have in front of them. So,
Sonny, you're saying even putting in additional infiltration systems will not help us get rid of the water?
It'll take a very little of the first half inch of what these systems were designed for, whatever drainage area we're talking about, and that's how you base how many of these whatever they are.
The beaker boxes.
Beaker boxes, yeah, the dune system. And that's basically, they just do flushing, basically, and then after these fill up, there's an overflow, mm-hmm. and that goes out to the beach.
Because like at Sea Watch, there's a stormwater outfall there now, right? And just replacing that with infiltration isn't going to do anything more in terms
and
of
that getting the water. And that is probably the last one on our list.
Yeah.
It would be $140,000, $150,000, and
mm-hmm.
none of those property owners are going to
do it. Well, I mean, there's really, right now,
it's
really
the community did offer.
Right, they did pay some.
He hit it on it.
That's
was a facility,
right.
A place to put it.
Yeah.
And it's 60 acres, so it has 60 acres of drainage. It has the hugest drainage area, even though the HOA did come forward and say we would contribute to this.
Right.
We just can't figure out how to do it.
Well, they even talked about possibly going across the street, treating before after it comes out of the pond.
Yeah.
And, it's just not feasible.
But they made them want
there's
the outfall.
There's much bigger fish to fry. Right. Like, we need to get rid of the water before we. Citizens want that right now.
We'll move on to the next one. That is review, decide, and implement the salary study and any potential salary adjustments. And that was done as part of the fiscal year 16 budget. And the last goal from last year was to monitor potential revenue shortfalls, and that we'll be doing in just a minute. So we'll do that on an annual basis as part of this retreat. So next I thought we'd move on, unless anybody has any questions at this point, we'll move on to kind of like the looking forward, which will include those projections. But before we get to that, we're just going to put up here the 5-year capital plans by fund. And I want to put that up here first because it actually impacts the projection. So, and I guess what these is, I put them up. If there's any questions, they can be directed to the applicable department head, I guess, in regard to any capital projects. So, the first thing is the general fund, of course. I'm showing what I put there initially is what was included in the final budget for this year and then what was projected by the department heads, for the next 5 years. And I don't think there's anything major that's changed on here from what was shown last year. I don't know if anybody has any questions for anybody at this point. Some of these may be discussed by the department heads later for their discussion of their activities. But
and have we done most or all of these?
The ones for this year?
Yeah, coming. So, yeah.
The bulk of those have been, almost all of those have been done, actually, because, yes.
Got the pickup truck and all of our police vehicles. Okay.
This is the water and sewer fund. Same idea of what was included this year and then the projections. I do have a note at the bottom that there's the timing, I guess, of the borderline replacement project, it's kind of just as a footnote at the bottom.
originally we were talking about starting it in this fiscal year. The timing of that, based on other priorities, may change, but so I just kind of footnoted that at the bottom.
I'm just trying to figure out how to do it.
So this is the one you've got a line where you just don't have the number in.
Well, it's at the bottom. It's 5,000. Yeah, because we were going to set up a whole separate fund to do that. So the only other big thing on here is, which is a big thing, is the lift station. HM and the lift station.
Yes, I need the lift station on H. Are you going to get that done before July or after?
It would be. I would like to talk to town council about the possibility of moving the schedule up a little bit, maybe a spring or fall, or the spring of maybe fall of next year. I don't know if all of you are aware, but we've had some major problems with the old lift station, and we've been maintaining it, trying to keep it running for the last 6 months. Right now, knock on wood, things are running really pretty good with it, but with the age, we need to really look at replacing it as soon as possible. So that's something I'd like to move up mid-budget time this coming fiscal year. And then,
how long would that take, Sam, so
3 months? Well, between drawings, permitting, and construction finish would probably be about eight to ten months.
Okay, the construction period when you actually would have access to the lift station, how long would that be?
Well, we'll have to continue to have access to our lift station at all times. This is our major lift station, where everything goes there except small ports. Some of the stuff to the south, so it has to stay in operation. There's no bypassing it, so the construction will, the location will be behind the existing, or we may talk about it differently, but this, right now, we're talking about behind the existing lift station, which ultimately just will be a bypass where we can just turn it on and it'll go to it and bypass the old one when it's necessary.
Now, if we have some bad storms, which we've done this coming fall, could it knock that lift station out? I mean, should we be working on it earlier?
It can always go out. We ran for about a month and a half with one pump. We have a dual pump system there. We ran about a month and a half with one pump due to the fact that the parts and pieces to fix it have to be made. That's how old this station is. So we had to wait for the parts to fix it. So yeah, there's always that possibility, but more than likely we could make sure that it continues to work. I don't even want to talk about that.
I would just like to give you as much time in advance as possible.
Yeah. I appreciate that. But yeah, it's going to take, I'd like to start getting some preliminary engineering started on it, and I think I have some engineering money left in my budget to get started on that, and that way it'll speed up the process. So.
And we'll talk about this more when you're up later?
We can talk some more about that. I was basically going to talk more about stormwater than anything else, but I'll talk about anything you want to talk about.
Well, I was thinking about what's more feasible, what's better economically and all, whether to have it adjacent or at the
right.
Earlier we talked about moving
right.
To.
Right. Well, that's going to kind of be up to the engineers. Yeah, to see how much trouble it's going to be in compared.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll probably need a little more information on how much trouble it's going to be to place it behind it and do the bypass as it is to do the other.
Well, I personally would be very, very much in favor of starting the engineering work as soon as you're available to do that.
Okay. Any other questions on water and sewer? Then there's stormwater. Again, the most significant piece of this is at the bottom, actually, because it was the what we talked about as part of the current year budget. There's a separate project at the Mercury Beach Village, and that
that point was estimated around $750,000. So we do have funds set up. If you remember earlier on, we talked about, you know, appropriating fund balance and transfers. Well, that was all set up as a separate capital project fund. And again, depending on the timing of that, that's, you know, what we'll do. You know, part of it will be funded by fund balance from the stormwater fund, and the remaining amount would be financing. Any other questions about stormwater?
Well, and we're going to be, I'll talk just a little briefly on that $750,000 project that we're talking about. Hopefully we can, method-wise, we can do a liner instead of tear up and replace. Matter of fact, we have a company in that's come in today to start cleaning video in the system, and we're going to take a look at if that's possible. If it is, then right now, worst case scenario is going to be less than $750. So we'll just go over that real briefly when we get to the stormwater.
Any other questions on capital plans? So what I'll move on to next is the different projections that I've done. And we started this last year, trying to look forward a little bit on, you know, looking at trends. Taking the same approach, and just updated it for the current year. So this is the general fund, and my assumptions and kind of process are the same for the general fund, water and sewer fund, and stormwater fund. So identifying what are the normal revenue sources for the year, and then looking at what the projected trend will be in regard to increases, looking at, again, what I call recurring operating expenses, or our normal operating expenses, taking out unusual things, taking out debt service and capital outlay, but adding them back in for the specific amounts from the capital plans. And I made some assumptions based, a lot of this is based on history, that revenue in the general fund will increase at about 1.75% per year, that the expenses will increase at about 5% per year. To keep this consistent, I assumed that there was no increase in property taxes or in any other fees. No additions to headcount in this these projections. No transfer to the beach protection fund or a contingency fund. All my debt service is based on the existing debt we have right now, plus what I estimated we finance as part of the five-year capital plan. And then there's an amount of capital outlay not financed. That's some of the smaller amounts that typically in prior years we would not finance, we would pay cash. So if we look at that, we kind of say, I guess, like a positive cash flow until about fiscal year 2019, based on these assumptions right here. Again, anything can change that. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about that?
One thought about the assumptions, if I can, Marlon. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that since payroll is the most significant element of the, I think it is anyway, most significant portion of cost, and if we're going to hold the, I see, okay, so the 5% growth is really just salary increases, not increases in people.
Right. Well, and it's not just, it would be any operating expense increase. So whether it's salaries or whether it's just, you know, materials that we need, et cetera.
Yeah.
And kind of looking at the trend, probably being extremely conservative with both, you know, the revenue's actually been increasing a little bit more than that, but I don't know if that's, you know, sustainable. So I, you know, lowered that estimate a little bit. Same with operating expenses, they've kind of been up and down. But, you know, I thought I did a conservative, you know, using 5%.
Okay.
This just kind of charts that out and kind of, and what we'd expect because, right, it's almost what we would expect based on the fact that we're saying no fee increases or property tax increase over that period of time. What I wanted to show is, well, what we thought last year at this point in time, based on assumptions and estimates, I thought it might be interesting just to take a quick look at that. So the blue being what we thought last year, red being this year, and you know, at least with the general fund, it's more favorable, more positive.
at this point in time than what it looked like last year, but at the same time, it can change significantly from year to year based on the way I'm doing this. So.
So which things did you change from this year to last year?
Well, one of the main things that changed was if you look at 2015, last year at this point in time, we projected that we'd have about 436,000, and so we had 484,000.
Okay, so it's just the starting point. All the other assumptions are the same, right?
Yeah, for the most part. I think it changed a little bit. So for the most part, yes. The starting point and maybe the revenue, I assumed, was going to grow a little bit more than they estimated last year, but not. I think last year I maybe used 1%, this year I used
1.2%. Okay. So you did change one of your assumptions.
Again, we're looking at how things have been developing and I guess other projections and statewide projections.
So I mean, this is a good long way to look at. It'd be interesting if some other towns did it to compare theirs, but I think what it shows is the town's in a good place, we just need to keep operating properly. But it's a good way to show the future. Good job.
And
did you get this from one of your courses or just came up with it?
Yeah. And it's just, you know, and if you look back, think back to when we showed the fund balances for all the different funds, I mean, everything, except for, I'll say, maybe water and sewer, everything has been very positive, I guess, in regard to, you know, the direction of those fund balances. So.
It also demonstrates why in 2019 we cannot accept a seven-phase partial payment for beach refurbishment, $1.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important.
Next, I'll move on to water and sewer. Again, kind of the same approach to water and sewer. One difference is I only assumed that revenue was going to increase at 0.5%, and a lot of that's based on our increase that we had this year. Even though I kind of did some adjustments in regard to revenue besides just that increase, that you do see a significant jump from 15 to 16. So, and then that's the effect of that increase. And then from that point forward, I assume like 0.5% increase. Everything else, similar approach in regard to how I came up with the operating expenses. And again, I'm looking at that, I'm using the 5% increase per year in operating expenses. That can fluctuate greatly. We have a sewer authority meeting later this week, and you know, all indications there is that that's going to go up, you know, $60,000 to $70,000 a year. The payments we made to pay for that. So, so that isn't necessarily reflected here either at this point. But you know, there's some things that can happen that can change this year. So, you know, no additions to headcount, no increases in water and sewer rates after the one that was put in place right now. And it excludes depreciation of assets. So when we look at that, we're kind of, even though we did this increase, we're kind of in the same, almost the same position as we were last year, that, you know, potentially the cash flow could kind of turn negative for around 2018. It really depends on usage. I mean, everything has been, had a lot more rain over the last couple of years, actually, and it's driven the usage down a little bit. If we get, you know, some dry weather and people start using their irrigation systems, we're going to see some of those numbers go way up. So.
Well, actually, that helps us, because we don't have to pay Carolina Beach for sewer if they do irrigation.
Right.
We charge them for it, so right. That actually helps our position.
Oh, yeah. it increases, you know, it doesn't help in regard to usage, but right. It does. So if we look at that over a period of, you know, those just charted that way, or it follows the same, basically the same pattern as the you know, general comment again, this. Need to build in, you know, future increases. I know some towns, I've been doing some research, increase the water and sewer rates every year. And it's part of their, you know, like capital plan, I guess, is to do that. I'm not saying we should do that. It's just, you know, there's all different theories and philosophies on that. I also then compared it to last year, the same thing I did for the general fund, the blue being last year, the red being this year. You see that big change for 2016, and that's the impact of the rate increase that we did for this year. And that also, you know, makes it more favorable going forward.
And then for this one, you have external rating, right? The little water sewer meter thing. We're still in the green there, right?
Yeah, we're still you know, we're still more favorable, you know, I guess favorable in regard to affordability, I guess.
Right.
We're very affordable. I mean, you look in the paper, you see that some other local towns are maybe looking at some fairly significant increases to their water sewer rates. So. Move on to the stormwater fund. Again, same approach to that, basically the same assumptions, except I'm going to assume that the revenue stays flat. And I'm doing that because if we're not increasing the fee, we don't really have any major changes in regard to the number of accounts that we're going to charge a fee to. And I actually reduced it a little bit from 2015 because I wasn't sure it would be really sustainable for the amount of stormwater building fees either on an ongoing basis here. So I just made an adjustment for that. Assume that operating expenses, again, the 5% per year, no increase in the rates and more headcount, and everything else based on the existing debt and the five-year capital plan. So you see this one's a little bit different because actually we stay favorable, I guess. Now, we're not building significant reserves, but we're staying favorable. And when we get out to actually 2021, we actually say we go back positive. And that's because the debt that we have on the covered port project actually is matures at that point. So that's about $80,000 a year. So that swings us back to positive. So we're actually pretty good in the stormwater fund, except for, again, we've got to look at what kind of reserves we want to build for future stormwater projects that can do some of these.
And I think our focus this year is going to be in here and it won't be favorable. So it's going to have some projects that maybe we just don't have a book yet, which is fine. That's the point.
Right. So, you know, we need at some point to look at some adjustment to the stormwater fees because of all these projects. I mean, I think that's, you know, a reasonable thing to do. And that's what we did a couple years ago.
I think taking out the building thing is good too because of what the authority council gave to the building inspector and Sonny to work with property owners to use that money to build a stormwater system instead of pay it to the town. So I think you take it out was the wise thing to do. I think more people are going to do that. Don't you agree, John? They're going to take that option, right?
Well, we can talk about it later when we talk about some of our fees, but sooner or later, the way our fee system is set up, we're going to be looking at not collecting very much money at all, as far as that's concerned.
So let's just chart that out again, you know, based on the bottom line we saw on the spreadsheet. And showing that when we pay off that loan, the back to a positive cash flow. And this, like I did for the other funds, just showing, you know, what we thought last year versus this year. Just one other thing I just wanted to throw in here, based on all the projects we talked about, existing debt, I thought I'd just show, okay, what could our projected outstanding debt be over the next few years? And, you know, you definitely see it spike in 2017, and that's really because of these capital projects that were the big ones, the lift station, the stormwater, and those types of things. But we stay well within a reasonable amount. I mean, if you look at the way the state figures what our debt limit is, it's something ridiculous, like $62 million. Mm-hmm. You know, which, so it's not that we'd ever want to go anywhere close to that, but you know, I think we stay manageable with this kind of approach. So
this includes everything you have on that capital limit list?
Yeah, and everything that's existing as we speak, and then anything that comes in, I factored that in as it would. Will be added to our outstanding debt. So
I think that's pretty outstanding.
Yeah.
And then it shows that, you know, the colors are by the different funds. And the last thing I have is just this is what council approved for the budget process back in the January meeting. So it's just, you know, say definitely what some of the key dates are. But I'll try to get everything out to the department heads by March 7th. Very similar to the approach we followed in the last few years, because I think that worked well. Looking to get everybody to get everything back to me by March 29th. And the first budget workshop is scheduled for April 13th, where we'll kind of go through everybody's requests and outside agency requests that are received. The second workshop on April 22nd, which at that point hopefully we're at a point where we basically have something that everybody agrees with and we have that draft budget. If not, we may have to schedule a third workshop somewhere between April 22nd and May 17th council meeting. So that's kind of the time frame that, you know, by the time we get to basically May 17th, we're all pretty comfortable with what we have, and that definitely by June 21st, we're ready to say this is what we're doing. So that's really all I have at this point. I don't know if anybody has any questions on any of that.
Thanks,
good work, good management. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to comment once again about town committees. You're a liaison to one of the town committees that spends general fund monies. Please ask them to submit a plan and a budget for everything they propose to work on next year. And that's not if we have a, how much money do we have in the committee budget?
Or usually 7,500.
Okay, about 7,500.
But in the past, I mean, recently that's only really been one committee.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's not a budget for 7,500. It's a budget for everything they want to do next year because it's really, really rough on us, and I'm sure Harlan has little trouble sleeping at night when we come up every 3 or 4 months with, ooh, you know, particular committee wants to do this, it's going to cost us $11,000. Or they want to do this, it's going to cost us $28,000. That needs to be in the budget that they submit to us right up there.
And I'll say quickly, you know, what I send out to the committees, I send out a form that I ask them to specify what they want to spend money on. So they give me something that says, we want, you know, if it's Slack, for example, you know, we want X amount for seals and this for, you know, parking improvement, this for selling. So if I do ask for that. Yeah, on occasion, like with this recent grant, I guess, that is kind of an exception, I guess. And even for the one that, the $28,000 one for next year, if we're really at May 17th, we really don't know what the status of that is. We really can't budget for it.
And, you know, plus we've been talking about, okay, the rental lot over here, we have things Sonny has to do in there, then the corral over here, we wanted lighting for it, we wanted lighting in other places. That, I mean, just like we're thinking about what we want to do the coming year, the committees need.
Right. And that's pretty much when I send that out to them. That's what I'm asking them to
do.
Yeah. Well, they
always do it.
Is it justifiable for them to understand when grants would be available? I mean, I understand that everything else is just that if there's an opportunity and it isn't budgeted, you want to ignore the opportunity because you weren't aware of it. So
right. And I don't think we do, actually. I don't think we would have ignored it just because it wasn't budgeted. Yeah, it's hard to say exactly the timing.
Yeah, the other side of it is they know, he knows, which one of the crossovers we should be making handicap accessible. Mm-hmm. And if the ultimate goal is to make every single one of them handicap accessible, you know, then we need to have some sort of, you know, plan for, okay, we're going to do these two next year, these two the next year, or if these three don't need it, we'll never have to worry about those, or, and therefore, parking lots have to be wheelchair accessible. And so, eventually, whether it's next year, the year after, all those deadlines could be set up, we're going to have to pave this one, and this one, and this one. These up here aren't handicap accessible, so we'll never paved those, but we need gravel for them because of the deterioration. And I don't know how this works with Sunny, but if you have to repair crossovers, does that become a big expense, or do you have it on a regular basis? That,
well, I mean, it can be. We just repair it to do that.
Okay. So that's
probably $3,000 or $4,000 I plan on my budget without, you know.
Okay. So maybe that's not as much of a deal as we want to end up with 100% or 50% of our crossovers being handicap accessible. And this is what it's going to cost. not be able to have those every year. But they need to be thinking about if we've done it, and this has to be done, this is what is going to have to come out of the general fund. So you know, get them thinking about a plan for all these crossovers out there.
Well, actually, I was going to bring that up later. I think council needs to give that direction.
Right.
Is it your overall goal that you want all the beach accesses to be ADA? If so, then that gives the committee where they need to go. Is it the goal to pave all of the accesses or not?
Well, I think every year I have said, think about what your committee does and work out plans, you know, on how that's going to happen and not just every year.
Do you want to do a break before we go into the next? We're at 9. Okay. A 10-minute break or 15. No, I'm just saying. You want, is that okay? Okay. Another stoplight?
No, I'm giving up on that. I've always wanted to put another one, but
I'm actually serious. Would it help?
No.
One of the things we're trying to do through the Wilmington MPO is an island-wide traffic study to get funding for that.
I don't see where it would help us, really. It's just, like I said, it's when saturation occurs. My biggest concern is just trying to get emergency services to the south end and back out again on a Saturday, Sunday, summertime. And I think all of us who live here are seeing the back of it. And so when that day comes, that's going to require coordination with us and the fire department and EMS and whoever to make that work for them. So we're trying to prepare some. it's not so much Paul Fisher, it is, you know, even south of that, or I'm talking the avenue, even south of the avenue. Mm-hmm. You know, when you sit there on Saturday, Sunday, and just back up down to the sharp curve, things on the ferry, or all over the ferry, and I'll sit there and count it, losing about 7-8 cars a minute. That's pretty slow.
Not a lot of speeding.
There is no speeding. No, there's not. And it's just, it is what it is. Just, I don't know what else we can do about it. Some people take the shortcuts to the turn up the avenue, and then shoot around that way. The majority stay on the main road, try to get out. And then it backs up through Carroll Beach all the way back. It's not just us. It's the back up starts. It's no cut. And it comes back. That's just what happens.
From where the state property starts, have a third lane that...
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Not a third lane that they could use coming, but also a third lane that if you needed it for emergencies coming from the area to at least our town line.
No. Unless there's enough a lot of light on that,
if we took the parking out?
That'd be squeezing.
And there's no parking on State Road anymore anyway, not even on the shoulders.
I mean, in our section of town, we have parking on Port Fisher.
I guess, Chief, I get the sense that some of the changes that we saw this year relative to the character of some of our visitors is driven to some extent by management of Freedom Park.
Well,
do you think that also may be pushing traffic down the street?
I can't say for sure. There's no way to validate that, so I don't know for sure. I just know we saw a lot more this year than we've seen in years past. And, I think it's a combination of that, from the gas prices falling, a lot more day trippers. Usually on the weekends in the summer, it's we're saturated by about 9:30. People get here very early, and it's full. And then the parking starts to backflow over to 34th Street, and those kinds of things, and those are issues to deal with. But I just think it's an attractive beach and providing services, and it's just a very popular place to go. It's not a secret anymore, that's for sure.
And wasn't the worst part about Freeman Park the week that they made all the changes and camping and people showed up? And because I know the Air Force Base down here said people just poured on there to camp out after hours who weren't military.
Yeah, I don't know, Emily, if it was the same weekend or not, I don't recall. I just know that there was a lot of, there was a huge influx after that.
Nope. I think there are a couple of factors, like the chief mentions, which is some factors do include the management of Freeman Park. Some factors do include the fact that we have some great services down here, some great resources down here, whether it be parking, whether it be concerts, whether it be the beauty of the beach. So there's a lot in right, it's not a secret. So we're attracting more people. It's a conundrum we do need to think about. I really hadn't thought about saying, let's get rid of parking on 421. Maybe that is a partial solution. I mean, not until you figure out how to take neighborhoods.
Right. Hopefully that'll be part of the, the plan we're working on for this year. Coming to grips with the fact that we're already saturated and it's going to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, you think White's Hole increasing parking rates and Carroll Beach increasing the area of parking? I wish I may. I don't know for sure. I mean, it doesn't have any impact yet, but there's no way to validate that. first one will occur in one o'clock. Now it's occurring at 8:39. So it's just more people sooner, and then, you know, the overflow that comes on top of that. So, and all that does is just drive up other things that go with it. You know, we do the quality of life complaints, things of that nature. Our call volume is definitely up this past year, as far as the number of deaths we had to deal with it. So it all comes with this, I think it's numbers. You take 1,000 people, you'll have so many events. 2,000 people, you'll have so many more events. And that's just the way it works. So, but hopefully, we can get through this year. I think the big thing, one of the biggest things we're going to, the council will see here probably in March, is our policy revision. And that'll take a little while to look at. So we're totally redoing that. And it's kind of like shooting a moving target. About the time we get it where we want, something changes, and we have to go back and revise it again. So hopefully we'll get you that draft in March. I think the town attorney's approved the majority of it. A little bit more left to get. I think as far as money-wise, we're probably going to ask you guys for another head this year. Need to do that, and we met last week talking about our space issues, and I think whoever's going to present that's got a pretty good idea what we might be able to swing that would help us all out.
Yes. So, on your staff, what do you really need versus what you're asking for?
The same. Yeah, what I need is another head.
Officer or detective?
Yeah, we'll probably put this guy in an investigative slot. We're starting to get behind in some of the narcotics activities, and we're seeing more and more of that. And we need to work with Carolina Beach, and it's not just specific to Carolina Beach, it's specific to the island as a whole, and then even across the bridge in the county. So we need to do more involved in that. Before we get too far behind. So, I can give you more information on that as we get closer to the budget. But as far as the other part of the manpower thing is that we're stacked up pretty good, and we can get by pretty well off season, during season. We're maxed out. There's no vacation or training or a bunch of anything that can occur. We just don't have manpower to cover.
Is there any such thing as getting part-time?
We currently run part-time, yes. They're just hard to find. And the part-time thing, you guys got to remember too, there's a caveat on that, in that there is no workers' compensation for part-time guys. We looked into that, I think Arlen's looked into it a time or two, so that's a negative thing. It's not a good thing. So they're here, they're doing their thing. Our part-time guys are fully functional. They come in, grab a vehicle, and go to work just like a full-time guy does. And, so they carry a huge responsibility. And we're currently looking for more part-time people. I think we have 5 now, and I think we're likely to have those.
Chief, do you see any possible way of improving the Blueprint Road problem?
No. I don't see it. I would take a major action on the county to improve that. You know, we currently, when we transport, has to go through Clay Road. We have to go to Carolina Beach, run on Match Street, do our business on Match Street, and then transport through Clay Road.
I talked to Ben Dave about it and a couple of judges about it, and what everybody says is one of the biggest problems is you can have a magistrate here, you could have a magistrate at Monkey Junction, but if you have a holding tank for one, they said there used to be one in Carolina Beach, maybe the city could build one at Monkey Junction, and they said doesn't even use the one that he has at the police department, because the cost is so exorbitant, not in building it, but in liability more than anything. If you were to leave somebody there and anything happened to them, self-inflicted or whatever, accidental, everybody would be up for a huge lawsuit that none of us could afford, and that it's economically, it's just not worth it.
Yes, no, I mean, we don't do the volume just about that. I mean, we don't. It's just, you know, if we have a few guys on and we have to take someone out, then, you know, we're down to one guy. Of course, sometimes we have to take two guys to transport one person, depending on what you're dealing with. And, you know, in the summertime weekend, it's a 5-hour deal. So, it's pretty selective about what we do, just due to the fact that sometimes we can't afford it.
Do you have a solution we could help
them
with?
No, other than, like I said, we're gonna ask to add another person this year. And we run our part-time guys and our full-time guys, and actually some every time, particularly during the weekends. And we try to keep ourselves staffed up as much as we can. In the event that we have to lose one or two guys, we still have coverage here. Our biggest fear is to be response to EMS calls and that kind of thing. Fire department's helped us out with that tremendously, which has been great. And so that pressure is off of us a little bit. And there are times here when there's no one here. There are times those times. They don't have a lot, but they do have it. Carolina Beach covers for us, and conversely, we cover for them when they're short. And that is a good thing too. You know, we're working with those guys really well, and they're working with us really well.
Sheriff's office ever help them?
They come once in a while. That's not something that we utilize on a regular basis. They help us out in other ways as far as technical services with ID and that kind of thing, but not on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. Looking out for the next 2 to 5 years, how much do you see us having to look at as far as staff?
It's hard to predict because a lot is going to depend on what we do with Parks and Rec and activities like that. I know we've cut back a little bit on some of the concerts, and that seems to back on us a little bit. We're going to try to keep someone there for that reason. And we just got to see what all this influx of people is going to bring us. I can't tell you or predict just yet. It's not going to be earth shattering, but something thing I think is going to have to grow. We continue to offer services and more people come here.
So you don't see just going for another 5 years without expanding?
No. I think it's going to grow gradually. It's not going to be earth shattering. It'll be a maximum at some point, I'm sure. But we're not there yet.
Anything else?
No, you got it.
And I wanted to know what are the things that y'all kind of overlook that you don't want to kind of.
You already know. You already know. Friday's we make a run in the afternoons to
Wednesday, Monday, Tuesday, I said, Monday, we don't have Thursday.
That's trash.
Special. Oh, yeah, we do, we have trash pickup, garbage, we don't get trash pickup. Thursday is our trash pickup.
What about our ongoing problem of renters putting the cans out sometimes several days early?
Well, we do have that off and on. In fact, it's nowhere near as bad as it used to be. John took care of that by running, I guess he wrote some citations and he talked to people or whatever, and that reduced that almost to nothing there for a while. I think we still have that problem every so often, but nowhere near as bad as we used to.
Every year, it starts up every single year. It's not so much me, it's just when Sunny switched to Monday pickups on Fort Fishing Boulevard, that hurt a lot of the issues that we had. They are still set up for collection on Saturdays because that's a switch every day. It's not uncommon for me to call several different real estate companies on a regular basis and ask them about trying to make sure that they put them out when it's supposed to be put out. Ordinances do allow enforcement of that. They're a little time consuming and it takes a little while to really enforce them and all. So a lot of times a lot easier for me to just make personal contact with property owners or the management companies and handle it like that. And in the meantime, I'll roll them back myself just because we need to keep it looking good.
Does Jesse help with any of those calls?
She does. She helps with drafting the letters that do go out. That in and of itself is a time consuming thing. And then keeping track of the timelines that are associated with those enforcement procedures.
The Realtors Association expressed some interest in putting first of all, they put a brochure together to go in all the units that says obey the local ordinances, which is nice, but nobody knows what the local ordinances are. So they've talked about putting the most important ordinances in their contract and indicating that if they are violated that and the company gets charged for it, that you know, they will collect from the lender. If they go ahead with that, which EA seems very interested in helping put that together, would you mind working with them to come up with the right ordinances for them to include?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Is that all, Sonny?
That's all I have.
Fire department, as far as management of all these additional tourists we're getting, you guys have anything? Lifeguards?
Well, we have all fires, we're not going to set fires. Lifeguards, the lifeguard system is what it is, it's in place. We usually hire around 32 lifeguards every year. And they man 10 times now. Beaches were well covered, I think. I don't see any problems with the lifeguard system. Assistant Chief Kennedy is in charge of the lifeguard. He was a lifeguard, probably one of the best we ever had him. And only one equal to him, and he's a paramedic now. But
I thought you were going to say, but he's the chief.
But any decisions to the lifeguards, I've totally gotten away from it, other than to go over the budget and a suggestion here or there that I need to tell them to call them taken care of. I'm a day late and not a short. So anything about the lifeguards, I would say ask Mr. Kennedy. We're fixing to build 3 more aluminum towers. We're doing away with all the wooden towers because we didn't hold up. And the aluminum tower was much lighter from what you had to move them. I can send two people down there and fly them up, move them around. If they get in front of you, play with a piece of equipment, you don't have any trouble moving them. The guards seem to like them. I can carry them up to the fire department and do maintenance on them if anybody breaks anything on them. I think they are a well thought out, well enhanced piece. When somebody threw the old wooden flavor, they was labeled. They threw these over, we just ran them back up and do that work. Ed, you got anything to like for us?
Overall, like he said, it's a great program. We have the best trained lifeguards in the county as far as the program is concerned. With Bryson Beach and Carolina Beach, we have the highest amount of EMTs on the beach at any time. So as far as a comparison to other beaches, we have a very successful program. We work well with the police department, same with the public works, you know, trash on the beach, sharks come up on the beach, that sort of stuff. It's a good recruiting factor for the fire department to get volunteers. A lot of those guys that they're in their service as a lifeguard, they come and join the fire department as volunteers, so that certainly helps. The only two issues that kind of need to be addressed. One is tower location issues, like David said earlier. We pretty much got that under wraps as far as, basically we have citizens that call and complain that there's a lifeguard tower in their view. We don't really see that's big of an issue. Ocean Dunes is the biggest issue. Harold has contacted the HOA, basically said you guys decide, we'll put it, you know, you guys decide as a whole, we'll put it there. So that's one issue. I really don't feel that needs to be addressed. The other issue is the 7 p.m. cleanup that we currently do. We discussed this last year. You know, it's a rule that needs to be enforced as far as tents being left on the beach after 7. But the issue is that we currently have lifeguards picking up the equipment after 7 when they could be used elsewhere. It's really not that big of an issue. I would say that the way that it really works is we have the lifeguards tell the citizens and the tourists, you guys can't leave your stuff on the beach after 7. We have them go around as much as they possibly can throughout the day and tell them that. After 7, if there's stuff left on the beach, lifeguards go, they pick up the equipment, they bring it back to the fire station. They usually call the police department, say that someone had stolen their beach equipment. Police department says, check with the fire department, they pick it up after 7. Next day, they come to the fire station, they pick up their gear, they say they have no idea of the rule. They say, no big deal, take your stuff, just don't leave it on the beach after 7. And that's the general rotation of how it works. So it's like I said, it's really not that big of a deal. I wouldn't say it's a waste of time, but the only issue that I see is that by using lifeguards to pick up trash during high-risk times where there is rip currents and that sort of thing, that may be a liability issue. Just, like I said, something for you guys to possibly think about for some insight.
We don't ever charge them when they come to pick up their stuff.
I don't think we have.
There's no fee schedule in the process of that.
Yeah, I think John can address that. Do we have a fee?
Only the ordinance provides for a $50 civil citation. Do we want to come across with that persona to our visitors like that? I think it's a large issue. Ed, how often do y'all pull things off the beach? Is that a daily basis, every couple of days?
It should be a daily basis, but it's probably a 5 out of 7 day basis that we do it. If we have a lot of rip currents, it's rough out there, then we're not going to make the guys pick up tents when they should be focusing on other things.
What time do you pick up these tents?
7 p.m.
How many people do you have on staff at 7 o'clock in the afternoon?
Two.
So
or maybe you need to staff a few more people on that 7.
Right, so you know, that's a possible solution, maybe have one person staff to go out there and actually just pick up each equipment. If there really seems to be no process. And you know, it's just kind of, hey guys, go out there and if you see tents, pick them up and bring them up here. We need to on the side.
I think we do need to think about this. Not so much that, but there's no penalty for the individuals, right? I mean, I understand what you're saying, John, but I'm thinking about SDMT, the most EMT lifeguards, 10 stations. We have, you know, our vehicles on the beach, they all have life-saving equipment on them. I don't think the other beaches have a lot of that stuff. We don't charge people to park, and they still don't follow the rules.
But part of the other problem we see is when they come up to the fire station to get this stuff, mm-hmm. that would be the time that they'd be issued to.
Well, that's right. That would be the point. It doesn't have to be real penal. I say, look, $10, $35,
$50 fine. Yeah, that was not mine. Thanks.
Well, plus the fact that we've got an untrained volunteer fireman or full-time fireman who's all of a sudden turned into a cop, issued with a citation, and expecting them to get paid.
Or, but you have only 2 people on at 7 o'clock. If they're meeting somewhere, why are we worried about tearing down equipment? That's a long beach. How big is the beach?
3 miles.
3 miles. It's 2 miles of beach.
Okay, so why is it only because of the turtles that we have?
Not the turtles, it's the residents. It wasn't.
It's because of the residents.
It's because of the turtles.
They leave the equipment. They rent a house and they put it up and
That is an issue right there. You come in for a day and they set up shop.
Mm-hmm. Right. You walk on the beach and walk in.
Completely understandable, right? Like, we've got emergency services that are running the beach, possibly. In the mornings, we've got turtle patrol. Not to mention, a lot of people walking.
And some of these guys out.
And particularly though, when people are putting these tents up, they're tying them off at a 45-degree angle down to the beach. That places a trip hazard, among mm-hmm. other things.
And we had the 200-square-foot one last year that stayed up for a week.
No, we didn't either.
Yeah, because I was down there and saw it.
We had 2 10-by-10s that were put together.
No, this was one of those you buy as a carport. And it was a family reunion with over 25 people.
The last one that I remember we had like that was about 2 years ago. They were throwing it up on a dune at night. I went out there to go pick it up, and the guy threatened to have me arrested.
This one has.
Yeah, they usually press it.
My point is, it sounds like we have some good reasons why we have the ordinance, but if we can't enforce it, including the fine, then there's no reason to have it. And so maybe it would be nice if the fire department, police department, and John kind of got together and figured out what is the process going to be? How do we set up the fine system?
Well,
who's going to clean it up?
What's the benefit of it? Is there a benefit?
Otherwise, there's no reason to have the ordinance.
Well, the benefit to the town?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a safety benefit if they're down at night.
Right. Yeah, like and the citizens.
The 3 weeks around the 4th of July, the first week preceding the 4th and 2 weeks after are the worst. Pretty much June is not a problem. August is very seldom ever a problem. You got 3 weeks there, everything's full. And most of the people that leave it down there have never been to Jerry Beaches the first time trip. So once we pick it up, they understand. Word gets around on the beach pretty quick. The key to it, in my experience, is that when heavy time starts, is get it right then. I mean, anybody leaves it, take it up. I found that if you let it, you know, try to sort of leave them and talk to them and whatnot and let it go, they'll just keep on pushing. But if you pick it up, to start with, word gets around, they'll pick yourself up on the beach and it's not near as bad.
Is there time for a lifeguard when they see someone putting
well,
up a tent, if they
it.
See it, to go by and say, by the way, we have an ordinance, you have
yeah,
to pay for
it. The ones that ride up down the beach are fucking tell people, I mean, see them putting them up and tell them they got to take them down.
I have an idea. We have a lot of local people here that walk the beach. Could we have a handout that we could give to the people that had their tent set up like at 5 o'clock in the evening and explain to them the reason that the beachfront has to be clear for emergency vehicles and for the public safety and give it to them so they know why they have to get their tents down? Because, you know, like the shark fit. How many times did you guys have to drive the ATVs to help somebody and it was high tide and you couldn't get through?
Can you address that, Ed? Or is
yeah,
that
we have a flyer currently, and we actually made a flyer because there's been a lot of emphasis put on this tent thing this past year. We actually made an additional flyer to go down there and basically put a sticker on a tent,
okay.
Like a warning sticker that says this tent needs to be taken down after 7. That way we don't have to actually go down there every single day and pick up 25 tents and 25 chairs, because then it just collects over there on the side of the fire department. We have to throw it away the very next morning deal with the people from this. Well, we had no idea of this. There was a sticker there. We give out brochures. We start with about probably 5,000 flyers, and they're all gone at the end of the season. Of course, there's more than 5,000 people that visit the beach, but to touch on every single person that comes to the tent, it's next to impossible. We tire of us.
But still, even doing that, you still pick up 5 days.
Oh yeah, and the answer is always the same. We had no idea. You know, I don't think anybody's out there willingly breaking the law.
Is it still that information going through the realtors too?
Yes. The Shoreline Act of Beach Protection,
yeah,
that's a brochure. The Shoreline Access to Beach Protection Committee did.
Did?
How many did they print? 5,000 or so?
I
thought
it was a lot.
But one thing, this is not posted on any of our beach access signs. We have all the other ordinances, but this is not posted.
My God, that's the only thing that we don't have.
I know. I'm saying we talked about education. Well, they wrap up the bell and Sonny.
Hey, I tell you,
put on your refrigerators.
Pick them up in the morning for $50, or you can pick them up for free between 1:30 and 2:30 in the afternoon. That's when people want to get on the beach. They don't want to be going for equipment, but it just kind of
makes sense. That's a good idea.
But we should figure out how to address that.
Yeah.
Ideas are welcome.
But I think it's like it's a maintenance issue. It's like what John said about the trash cans. You gotta get people to know, and I think the chief said it exactly right. If you jump on at the beginning, the word gets out, and people don't want their stuff picked up, because then they interrupt their vacation to go get it. From my standpoint, Ed, I think you need to put it in your budget for the overtime if you're concerned that two people at 7 aren't covering what you won't cover, and have the overtime for someone to pick it up.